The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 480, recorded on October 1st, 480th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 313th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry in a gaming flashback. So I have to explain a few things. I just posted episode 478 a couple of hours ago because for whatever reason it wasn't posted. So everybody who's listening to this podcast a couple of days before, you just got a two-week-old podcast. For those of you who don't know, it's the one that we discussed Mass Effect, and, you know, I have to delay episode 479 because I had no internet, and I'm not going to post that episode immediately after that one, so it's going to have to wait, or it could be just a future episode. It wasn't the greatest episode, so it's not a big loss. Well, I'll just post it on a week where we are too busy to do anything.
The lost episodes.
Yeah, well, more like the delayed episodes. But while we're at it, what have you been playing, TJ?
So I've been playing this game called Judge, spelled J-Y-D-G-E. And it's like, it's a riff on a couple things. It's a Hotline Miami-esque game where you come into levels, you kill villains in the level, and you leave. But it's the theme to it is it's pretty much Judge Dredd. Like, completely from top to bottom it's a Judge Dredd setup where you are a mechanical dude who is the lore, and it's pretty fun. And like as far as like the weapons go, the difficulty of the levels go, it's nothing complex, but it is simple, mindless fun that with a pretty good soundtrack to sort of get the blood moving.
Is that all we ever want? Simple, mindless fun?
Yeah.
Does anybody say, I am the law?
I wish, but like at the very start, like, there's very, very little narrative, but you do get this guy at the beginning that's just like, things are crazy. Send in the judge.
Okay, so it's a fan film, except it's a video game.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a fan homage to a lot of things, and all of them come together pretty nicely.
How about you, Scott? What have you been playing?
I've been playing The Wise 2. Gotten farther in that one. And yeah, they have magic in this one, unlike in the first game. So that's pretty cool.
Okay. As for me, I've been playing the hell out of Cooking Dash. and I haven't played much else, you know. I think all of my energy... Well, that's not true. I have been playing Bloody Zombies a bit, but that's for a review. I am really... Oh, one of the free games that I didn't know I had was Oxenfree. So at some point, I'm going to have to play that.
It's a good one. I played through all of it for one playthrough. I know there are multiple endings to that game. I had a good time with it. It's a very interesting little horror-themed point-and-click adventure, which I don't remember going through a lot of horror-themed point-and-clicks that I can think of off the top of my head.
Phantasmagoria.
You know, I was about to say, Scott is going to say Phantasmagoria now.
And Seventh Guest.
I don't know if Seventh Guest you can consider horror. I mean, and it's not that scary.
It's suspenseful.
Or at least,
but like,
a little bit.
But it's suspenseful, I will agree with you there. Phantasmagoria is definitely up there. That is like a straight-up brutal slasher flick.
There's another one.
I don't think Gabriel Knight is a horror. I think it's more of an adventure.
You got werewolves and vampires and voodoo witches. You could put it in the horror.
Yeah, it's horror-themed, but I don't know if it's especially horrifying. I think it's more like a psychological adventure more.
There's witnessing people getting hanged, people...
Yeah, but you have that in Pirates of the Caribbean, too.
I consider it into the horror theme. There's also another one. There's another game I'm trying to remember. I can't remember if it's Scream or it's like...
Psychosis, the original Alone in the Dark.
Well, that's another one, but I wasn't thinking of Alone in the Dark. It's one where you're trying to figure out what's going on in your head, and you're trying to figure out if it's real or not, and it's this really crazy, like, mind.
That's that old. There's a game called Sanitarium, yeah. That's I thought you were talking about that old Wii game in which it would cause your TV to mute or pretend to shut off, or because there's some games that like to do that to you. I mean, the Call of Cthulhu game, not the ones with the Eyes of the Shadows, but it was a different one, would tell you, okay, we're going to format your hard drive now. Bye.
I'm not saying they didn't exist. I've definitely played a couple things like that where I think way back in the day they had a video game based on Elvira. There was one of those, and the Wax Museum was one of them.
You know, the scariest game that I've played wasn't an adventure game like that. It was Fear, the first Fear.
If you enjoy Fear, if you enjoy the style that Fear goes with, I mean, Oxenfree isn't nearly as brutal as Fear, but it does hit those same sort of psychological specter beats, I would say.
Yeah, although, you know, the horror little girl with long hair over her face trope is getting old.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times The Ring, Grudge, and all that? Oh, come on.
I heard they were doing another one at some point. Like, so it's in the works, and I'm just like, well, why? Why go back to that again?
Are you talking about Rings? That already came out.
I thought they'd been doing a lot of parody of that, you know, just making fun of the whole scary girl movie.
Scary Movie, I think it was number 3, was the one that parodied The Ring.
I've seen it in other places too, but yeah, that one.
But here's the thing. It's really scary in a shooter when you don't really have control over what's going on, because I remember The Gunman Chronicles, which was basically a Wild West version of Half-Life, had a scene with a gigantic dinosaur that was really scary, even though it was just, you know, the problem was that you really couldn't control where you were going because the ground kept on shifting under you. And that was actually kind of scary, even though it wasn't horror, but it was still scary. When you lose control of your character in a video game, I think that's when people get the most scared.
Yeah, and I think they did that well in Oxenfree, because literally you're playing a bunch of just like, I mean, it's almost like the cast of Life is Strange, like just a bunch of sort of hipster kids.
You're talking about Cabin in the Woods, aren't you?
Sort of. It does hit some similar beats to that, too. There's a lot going on in that game. It's a really good, worthwhile playthrough at least one time. And I think they did a good job on the music. They did a good job on the characters and the voice acting, which for a horror game, you need that. I think.
Keep in mind, I haven't played it. Oh, you know, someone spoiled the ending of Inside for me on Rebel FM. I still have to play it, even though, because I don't think their description really captured what happens in it, so I'm still going to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And I still think it'll be batshit crazy and shocking when I see it, even though I know they nominally described what happened. I'm not going to tell anybody what I heard, because I know there's a lot of people who still haven't played Inside. I have been playing a lot of and here's the thing about – oh, I also started playing Homescapes. Now, if that sounds familiar, it's the sequel to Gardenscapes. And for people who don't know that, it's in which you're doing a lot of Match 3 games, but it's wrapped around the idea that you're improving your house as a butler and your parents want to sell it and you're trying to convince them not to sell it. And I'm going to tell you something. Like Gardenscapes, this game oozes charm. Not to mention it's free to play. But it's extremely soft on the microtransactions in that it really doesn't remind you every 2 seconds, you want to buy this, you want to buy this, you want to buy this, you know, like Final Fantasy 15 or Killshot Bravo. It's sort of like, you know, and even the hard mazes, after a few tries, I was able to get past them. So it wasn't like I was constantly having to buy new lives. Unlike that Family Guy mastery game in which I just quit because, you know, at some point it's impossible to move without having to spend a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And with Homescapes, I have not once spent a penny on it, and I'm still enjoying myself a lot. So if you really want a relaxing Match 3 game, try Homescapes. It's really good. I did my advertisement for the day. And one of the best parts of that game, by the way, is that it has a fake Facebook page, and as you play the game, things keep on getting added, And it's just these little charming conversations between the characters. And it feels real, and that's why it motivates you to keep playing, because it is that charming.
Yeah.
I think I'm in my gear up mode in that I'm gearing up for Shadow of War. Right now it's a week and a half away and I cannot wait. And here's the odd thing. I think I'm going to have to buy the $99 version. If only because it comes with the extra types of tribes. And I don't really care about the legendary items that come with it. But it also, the difference between it and the gold version is that this version also comes with a season pass. And I'm going to have to pay for the season pass anyway.
So. Yeah. And I mean, that sounds like a game where you're going to play the DLC. So you might as well.
Like a game I'm going to play over and over again. I mean, if it's half the game that it's promising to be, I'll be very pleased.
Yeah. Did you finish your other playthrough? Weren't you trying to get another playthrough done?
I 100%ed that a while ago. Okay. But here's the other thing. On November 4th, I'll be getting my Xbox One X, which means a lot of games will be upgrading to 4K HDR, and guess what? Shadow of War is one of them.
Nice.
So I'm getting ready for that. So by the way, on that note, here's the thing. I already got a $70 off from ordering the Xbox One X at Amazon. I'm also going to be trading in my my Xbox One, which is going to take off $139 from it. So generally, I'm going to be spending $350 on an Xbox One X. And it's also the Project Scorpio edition, which means nothing except it has Project Scorpio written on it. I wish they would do something a little bit more special, like make it green. You know, make the case an alternate color so that it really stands out. Remember a couple of years ago, the Xbox One X, the Xbox Ones, the special edition that were never given out to the public but were given to people who worked on it, were the white case ones, and everybody loved the fuck out of the white case Xbox Ones. And imagine if they had sold those. It's unfortunate they never had that special edition. I wish they would do that with this. Have a green case as Project Scorpio Edition Xbox One X, so at least there's a difference. I mean, I got a launch Xbox One, and the only difference is that the controller says Day One Edition. Big whoop.
One of my cousins still has his Gears of War 3 edition.
The red one.
Xbox. Yeah, the one with the skull painting across the side.
They sell those used at GameStop, so I'm always tempted to buy one.
It looks sick. I love it. It's one of his little prizes. Like he's on Xbox One, but like it's one of those things that he's never going to get rid of.
Yeah. I still have my launch NES somewhere with the Robbie the Robot.
Nice.
Anyway, speaking of nice, I could have sworn we did this game in the gaming flashback, but doing a search revealed that we didn't. And I think it's kind of an obvious one. So this week's gaming flashback is Psychonauts. Psychonauts is a platform video game developed by Double Fine Productions. The game was initially published by Majesco Entertainment in 2005 and 2006 for Microsoft Windows, Xbox, and PlayStation 2. Budcat Creations helped the PlayStation 2 port. By the way, for those of you who don't know, the PlayStation 2 port was terrible. Anyways, in 2011, Double Fine acquired the rights to the title, allowing the company to republish the title with updates from modern gaming systems and creating an OS X and Linux ports. Psychonauts follows the player character Raz, which, by the way, is short for Razputin, Razputin, voiced by Richard Horvitz, a young boy gifted with psychic abilities who runs away from the circus to try and sneak into a summer camp for those with similar powers to become a psychonaut, a spy with psychic abilities. He finds there's a sinister plot occurring at the camp that only he can stop. The game is centered on exploring the strange and imaginative minds of various characters that Raz enters as a psychonaut in training, or a psychonet, to help them overcome their fears or memories of their past so as to gain their help and progress in the game. Raz uses one of several psychic abilities during the game that are used both for attacking foes and solving puzzles. Psychonauts was based on an abandoned concept that Schaefer had during the development of Full Throttle, which he expanded out to a full game through Double Fine. And by the way, that abandoned concept was that Ben would take some drugs and have a psychedelic experience. The game was initially backed by Microsoft's Ed Fries as a premier title for the original Xbox console, but several internal and external issues led to difficulties for Double Fine in meeting various milestones and responding to testing feedback following Fries' departure in 2004. Microsoft dropped the publishing rights. Double Fine was able to secure Majesco as a publisher for a few months after allowing them to complete the game for after 4.5 years of development. And by the way, for those who don't remember Majesco, they made the worst friggin' games. They would release shovelware by the boatloads.
Mm-hmm.
Despite strong critical praise, Psychonauts did not sell well, with only about 100,000 retail units sold at the time of release, leading to severe financial loss for Majesco and their departure from the video game market. Which is kind of ironic. Like I said, they made their money doing shovelware, but they actually have a genuine game, does nothing. Psychonauts has since earned a number of industry awards and gained a cult following. Following the acquisition of the game, Double Fine's republishing capabilities and support for modern platforms has allowed them to offer the game through digital distribution, most notably Steam. And I think good old games, I'm not sure. And the company has reported their own sales of the game have far exceeded what was initially sold on its original release, with cumulative sales of nearly 1.7 million as of December 2015. I think that's a little bit more than 100,000. A sequel, Psychonauts 2, which I'm a backer of, was announced at the Game Awards in December of 2015. And, oh, by the way, I was one of those people who pre-ordered Psychonauts.
Hmm.
And one of the prizes of my of that pre-order is that it came – pre-order bonus was a deck of Psychonauts cards, which are still wrapped, and I show off to people. I also have the pre-order Red Dead Redemption cards too. And the reason why I pre-ordered it is because I was privy to a special demoing it of a Game Lab in New York, and I loved it immediately, and I said, oh, no, I'm gonna pre-order this. And little did I know that I was one of five or six people who probably pre-ordered it.
I love this game. I feel like it's one of the benchmarks of Double Fine's humor. Obviously, there have been a lot of humors. What's that?
That and Grim Fandango.
Yeah. But there are a few games like this that explore both the humor and the dark side of Double Fine, as well as, like, putting characters
You make squirrel heads explode.
Yeah, but even just, like, characters in of themselves. You got Sasha 9, who is just, like, this guy that's, like, a hardcore German, dry completely, but has this funny little hatred of gaudy lamps.
Well, there's
of
a reason
things.
For that, and the sad reason for it is that his father used to screw around with other women, and that lamp was in their room. So that's what he remembers from it.
And then you have I forget what her name
Mila.
Is.
Mila. She was Mila. She's a bubbly disco kind of girl, but her dark secret is that the orphanage burned down, and since she was psychic, she could hear all the children screaming from inside her head. Can you imagine that?
Yeah. So you have this tremendous balance of, like, twisted darkness alongside some pretty good humor.
You have the two cheerleaders who really want to just do a double suicide. This game does not screw around, folks.
And then there's Richard Horvitz. Like, that guy is
Raz.
In a lot of things. Well, I'm talking about the voice actor, Richard Horvitz. Billy and Billy and Mandy, Zim and Invader Zim, Dag and the two Angry Beavers. Guy's been around, but he's also one of those voices that, like, I recognize it instantly, and I'm almost always ready to hate it, but then the way that they write his characters usually turns me around to it.
Yeah, the opposite is with whoever did the voice for Starscream. It just makes me want to punch that actor in the face. I hate it. It's like, I don't know how us kids in the 80s used to deal with that Starscream. Oh,
is that the same as Cobra Commander?
Yeah, actually, it is Cobra Commander.
I kind of love that voice.
It's like someone put Michael Palin's balls in a vice while he was doing the old lady character from Monty Python. But also, here's the thing. There's an item called Mr. Pokelope, who's a turtle. And even though the mission requires you to take a few steps to give it to somebody, you can leave that level and show it to everybody way out of that level, just to get, and they all have different reactions to that Mr. Pokelope. All of them do. That's how much planning went into this game. And by the way, they made it into achievement in Steam if you show Mr. Pokelope to everybody. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, everything that you do, like, and the world that that Raz enters are so weird and creative. You can be a giant creature like Godzilla called Gogalore, who's stomping on cities full of lungfish. You can enter the Milkman's paranoid fantasy where everything has binoculars coming out of it, and you have spies. If you give them, if you have a rolling pin, they go, "I am a wife baking cookies. When will my husband be home?" You know, or if they pretend, "I am a grieving widow. Why, God, oh why?" You know, you can be in a black velvet world, which is, by the way, my favorite world. It's just so, because everything is also under UV light. You can, you know, there's so many things that you can do, and the story is great. It's just, you know, there's so many things that you can explore. The only problem with the game is that the difficulty at the very end ramps up to near impossible levels. And that's what got me to quit. I had to watch the ending on YouTube because I could not pass that level, and I was pretty good at it too. So, Scott, have you played Psychonauts?
Yes, I have played it. I enjoyed that game a lot. I liked finding out the secrets and going into their minds and seeing what happened to the coaches, the teachers that are, you know, and it. I really felt bad for the disco lady teacher.
Mila.
She just, yeah, Mila. That just, like, really heart-wrenching to imagine all those, you know, having that burned into your mind, hearing their screams.
And, you know, they took out of the game, the reason why you find out about it is because there's a secret little hole in her race course, and they actually took out the voices of the kids burning to death in that thing. They decided to remove it. Just had a bunch of just shocked looking characters.
No, I thought I could remember them screaming or something, or calling for her help, you know, telling them to help her. Or
yeah, well, that's what she said happened. But you actually, you know, what happens is, now one of the things you have in the game are emotional baggages, right? And when you go into them,
yeah.
You get to look at them. Oh, geez, what are they called again? You know, those things that you look in. Geez, I forgot the name of it. You know what I'm talking about. You know, you press it and it moves on.
It's been a while since I played the game. I have to play it again, I think. I never completed it, so I should.
Viewmasters.
I should play it again.
Yeah, you looked into Viewmasters. You know,
okay.
And you could have these things. There's one strange one called "The World Shall Taste My Eggs," which is actually spoiling the entire plot of the game, except it's done so abstractly you don't realize it until the game is over. But
yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
That was another thing they handled well, was just like little Easter eggs like that in that game. Like you said, there was just little spots all over that if you didn't know you were looking for what you were looking at, you might not understand. But like, there was just all sorts of little quirks and all sorts of things worth exploring exploring every edge of that game worthwhile.
Like I said, it is on Steam, so I think it's $10. You have no excuse not playing it if you want to play a little game of gaming history. And like I said, my proudest moment is that I was the one who pre-ordered it because I know my games. Anyway.
It is a fun game to have played, and I definitely recommend it as well.
Oh, by the way, I almost forgot the music too. The music is fantastic, and it's one of the underlooked parts of that game.
Mm-hmm. It is like that 70s spy sort of rhetoric, isn't it?
Oh, you mean the 60s No One Lives Forever?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, that's it's they're different, but it's more like bam. I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to include the actual score at this place here so that you can actually hear what the music actually sounds like.
Yeah, and the game is also in Good Old Games as well. It's on both.
No one lives forever. You know, we already did that gaming flashback for No One Lives Forever, but I that is also one of my favorite games.
Yeah. And I have to say, like, for... If you have a PS4 and you have a PSVR sitting around, Rhombus of Ruin is some good additional content to that. It takes place.
They did a Psychonauts VR title for the PS4, just so you know.
Rhombus of Ruin.
Yeah.
It takes place right after the end of the first game, but before the second game is supposed to take place. So it's a nice little bit of additional content if you're looking for something to tide yourself over. You've played through the first one. You're looking for something to do before you play the second one. It's a good little bit, and I really enjoyed the way they incorporated the psychic abilities into the PSVR game.
Now, if you want to know how much I love Psychonauts, I backed Psychonauts to $840.
That's a lot of dollars.
Yeah,
that includes the book bag. That's why I really want. So I'm spending that much because the items that I wanted, and also I'm friends with Tim Schafer, so why not? Anyways, we're going to move on to game news now. First game news: Captain Falcon was almost the mascot of the Super Nintendo. Yes, it was me. I was going to be the mascot. There's my hidden history. This is from Dual Shockers. According to one of the original designers behind F-Zero, Captain Falcon was originally designed to be the main mascot of the Super Nintendo. Writer Akinori Sao sat down with some of the original F-Zero development team to talk about the game's design, development, and main protagonist, Captain Falcon. During the interview, one of the game designers, Takaya Imamura, confirmed that Captain Falcon was actually supposed to be the mascot for the NES, Super NES. In the interview, Imamura revealed Captain Falcon was originally the mascot character for Super NES. Even most people at Nintendo don't know that. When development of F-Zero was nearly complete, I was doing a bunch of illustrations and someone expressed a desire to make a mascot character for the Super Nintendo with a name like Captain Something. Now, here's the thing that I remember. Was it Star Fox who was initially the mascot character of the Super Nintendo when it first came out?
Probably up until the point that Super Mario World came back and Mario pretty much took it all with reckless abandon once again.
I always thought it was Mario. I didn't think it stopped being Mario.
No, it was Star Fox for a little bit because Star Fox was the new hotness with the 3D graphics.
Yeah.
And he was a cartoon fox. I mean, what more could you say?
And the F-Zero was a pretty early release on the SNES. It was kind of like their benchmark game for how they were going to describe Mode 7, which was the way by which they sort of revolved the world around the screen to give it a sort of 3D effect for games like Mario Kart. And F-Zero is one of those series that throughout Nintendo history will probably never get as much credit as it deserves for how much they've used it to push their technology. But
it's sort of like their Wipeout.
It is, in a lot of ways. They experimented with a lot of stuff like that. I remember reading this interview recently about F-Zero where they were talking about one of the things that they used to cut cost and cut animation time on that game was if they were going to try to make a racing game, they wanted to do less frames than you'd have to use if you actually put wheels on a car and actually made them rotate. So the workaround around that was to put it in the future and make it so cars didn't have wheels.
I didn't play much F-Zero. It wasn't my type of game. I was actually playing Star Fox at the time. I only had Super Nintendo for a short bit when I was living with somebody. And then I just went back to PC gaming because I was PC gaming master race.
I remember they used Mode 7 in Pilot Wings and even in Final Fantasy VI when you're in the airship and you're flying above the world. They kind of like fold the planet so it looks like it, you know, curve and all that. And I think they did that in Enigma as well.
Well, they did it for 3 Final Fantasy games, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
They also did it for Super Mario RPG, Legend of the Seven Stars, Hyper Zone, Super Mario Kart, Super Mario World, Super Metroid, Super Robot Wars series, Super Star Wars, Chrono Trigger. Chrono Trigger. Mega Man 7, some sports games, and, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was only for the SNES, by the way, for those of you wondering.
Yeah. It was a very specific way of, like bending the world around the camera.
By the way, it was a faux 3D system. In other words, it was 2D, but it tricked your mind into thinking it was 3D. Sort of like Duke Nukem. The original Duke Nukem 3D.
And F-Zero was like, it was the tech demo for that. It was the tech demo for Mode 7.
Anyways,
it would have been interesting. It would have been interesting to see them use Captain Falcon as a mascot for it, but I guess they just never really focused on it, so he just kind of becomes this backdrop character that no one really knows about or.
They wrote comics for Captain Falcon. They actually gave him an entire backstory. Like
I had to Google him to remember who the heck you guys were talking about.
I love
Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo was my game system. So if I didn't even know who the fuck Captain Falcon is, it's not really that impressive.
But here's the problem. In Star Fox, you're always having Star Fox's face in there. I'm just saying, Captain Falcon is just an extraneous character who happens to be the lead character, but he's never. It's his car that's the focus. Yeah. Not him. But in Star Fox, you see his face. You see his teammates' faces also. You know, but it's you're always seeing his face in game, which means it's. I mean, BJ Blefowski, even though he didn't have a name, you knew who that was because you see his mugging face on the bottom of the screen when you're playing Wolfenstein.
Yeah, the only time you really see Captain Falcon's face is when you're actually he has a character portrait when you're selecting your character, and they all have character portraits, but that's really the only time you ever see any of them. Yeah. Outside of that, the only way to really know about Captain Falcon was that there was an expanded comic about him in the booklets on some of the games. And it was like something like he was a bounty hunter, and one of the other racers was his villain.
Was it done through Nintendo Power, or was this separate?
I think it was an add-on to one of the game manuals for one of the games, and I can't remember which one that would have been.
The only way that Captain Falcon became even known is because of Super Smash Brothers, because you know the meme.
Yeah.
Falcon Punch.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't even his own game. See, that's the problem. That's why he didn't become like I said, you didn't see his face. It wasn't like Sonic. It wasn't even like Crash Bandicoot, for that matter, who was going to be the mascot for PlayStation.
Mm-hmm. Who was the mascot for a PlayStation for a while?
He was the mascot for long enough. Actually, you know what? I don't even know who the mascot was afterward.
I would say once they got to PS3, it would probably have been Kratos or Nathan Drake.
I think more Nathan Drake. Kratos is a black hole of who cares. He's just so unlikable. It's not fun. Well, actually, Nathan Drake isn't likable either. He's a dick, but I guess. See, that's what I don't like about a lot of this Sony PlayStation characters. They're dicks, and unlikable dicks at that. And I'm including The Last of Us right there in it. You know, I hate those characters in that game, too.
Jack and Daxter were okay.
Yeah, Jack and Daxter would have been a more archetypal mascot, but I don't know, PlayStation just didn't want... I guess they were afraid of emulating Nintendo with soft, cuddly, plushy types, and they wanted their hard edge, you know?
The mascot of PlayStation is the Naughty Dog Studio.
Until Naughty Dog Studio made a third-party game for other people. One third-party game. Uh-oh. That's it. Anyways... We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Hackers have already infiltrated the Call of Duty WW2 open beta from PC Gamer. The Call of Duty WW2 PC multiplayer beta launched only 3 days ago, but the hackers have already invaded. There's multiple videos doing the rounds of cheaters having their way with players. The first of which was seen on a Reddit post where a user, Jarek Blooddragon, shared a clip of an obvious aimbot. Quote, "It's becoming more and more difficult to find a game in WW2 open beta without there being an incredibly obvious hacker not trying to hide it," they said. "At one point, I got 5 games in a row with these types of hackers. All different lobbies, all different hackers."
Users
responded with their own tales of hackers they'd encountered, and there's also a Steam thread highlighting the same issue, accompanied by this clip of another aimbot cheat. It's not clear how widespread the problem is, with one user on the Reddit thread claiming it's completely rampant, while others haven't come across a single case of cheating. There's a fair few videos on YouTube documenting the in-game hacking, though. Redditors on the thread point out it's not particularly surprising that the beta has attracted hackers, nor is it cause for panic, but the response from developers Sledgehammer Games and Raven Software will be key, because this needs to be stamped out at the first opportunity. And I mean, better that they figure this out in the beta than they figure it out at launch.
But the problem is that you're still going to turn off people in the beta, and that's the danger. If people are turned off by your game while playing the beta, they're not going to buy the main game.
Maybe, unless they like make a, unless they use this opportunity to actually push a system of like basically reporting people and making sure that there's an easy way to deal out punishment if it happens. I mean, if anything, they should be looking to their buddies over at Blizzard Activision with Overwatch and how hard they're hitting cheaters at every opportunity.
I don't know. I just don't like PC shooting a multiplayer because this happens way too much. I mean, at least in a closed system on a console, this happens a lot less because it's a closed system. And, you know, you'd really have to go through a lot just to cheat. And, you know, the thing is, you know, is your dick really that small that you have to cheat in a beta? Seriously?
I will never understand what works in the minds of a cheater, but it's really fun. Like, you ever have the opportunity, follow Jeff Kaplan, like, well, either on...
Wait, before you say, I'm not even talking about an actual game where you might have rankings. I'm talking about the beta.
Yeah. But I would say follow Jeff Kaplan, because his on the forum and on the on his Twitter and whatnot, that guy is a cavalcade of fun when it comes to just stamping out idiots that think they can get away with being assholes or cheating at the game.
Isn't there already a Call of Duty World War II?
Yeah, it's all three of... It's like four of the first Call of Duty games, but they haven't gone back to it in a while. They went to Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2,
Black Ops, and like, all the other stuff like that.
Yeah, just like they've been exploring different eras for about probably over 10 years now, and this is the first return that they've gone back to World War II since World at War, which was in about, I think it was a 2007 game.
You know, I'd like to see, here's the thing, you know, all the Call of Duty games, all the Call of Duty World War II games, they've done Europe and they've done the Pacific Theater, which is World at War. How come they haven't done Africa yet?
They've touched on it in some of the games. I remember one of the first missions in one of the Call of Duties.
Fighting Rommel would be great.
One of the first missions in one of the Call of Duty games was Operation Torchlight, which was in, I think, Morocco. So they've touched on it, but they haven't really explored that theater extensively. Call of Duty World at War was 2008, and that was the last time they did a World War II game. So technology has advanced by miles since then. It's almost been a decade. I've fiddled with it. I've played some story missions. I've actually seen story missions in action, and I've played the multiplayer, and it is relatively like refreshing to get back to using a Thompson and an M1 Grand and an MP40, but it's also like awesome how much they've learned over the years since they've gone back to that.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Assassin's Creed Origins Nonviolent Discovery Tour Update wants to teach you history. This is from PC Gamer. Would you like to take a guided tour of the pyramids of Giza as Queen Cleopatra? Assassin's Creed Origins is getting a free update in early 2018 that will allow you to do just that. Discovery mode will strip out all the game's combat and quests so you can wander peacefully around Ubisoft's huge recreation of ancient Egypt in 20-minute guided tours with voice narration and custom animations. In a brief demo shown at preview event yesterday, Origins hero Bayek watched a body undergo ritual evisceration as a voiceover respectively detailed the process. Caesar Ptolemy and Cleopatra were listed as unlockables on the character select screen, though it's not clear yet how they will be unlocked or whether they will come with specific tours of their own.
It's Ptolemy, by the way.
Yeah, Ubisoft says that it has consulted academics to ensure the accuracy of these tours, and it sees Discovery Mode as an extension of this series' excellent in-game historical databases. The team considered the mode after hearing the stories of teachers using their games to excite students and about history. Towards that, remove all of the inconvenient tabbing to make the game more classroom-friendly. I like this option, because sometimes you just like looking at the landscape and not having to worry about angry guards coming after you and just want to enjoy the scenery and exploring.
You know, the in-game, I guess you would call it Encyclopedia. In the first few games, Assassin's Creed 2 and the ones from 2 had all of these little notes that every time you visited a famous place, it would talk about its history and what it was doing and context of the game and all that stuff. It was like a history lesson there. Recent versions have been really badly done and lazy, but the first few games had some really good, in-game descriptions, historical explanations of each of the things. As a matter of fact, when you played Assassin's Creed 2, I was wondering, when are they going to have the Night of the Bonfires, Bonfire of the Vanities? And they did it as a DLC, which I was like, yo, if they can have it in that period, you must have the Bonfire of the Vanities. For those of you who don't know, it was when, oh, geez, I forgot his name. His name begins with an S. Whipped up Florence into a religious ecstasy and just burned every artwork in the place. It was a Dominican monk, and I'm trying to remember his name. But it is where the name of the book came from, although it's not really all that. Anyways. Go ahead.
I would like this in a lot of open world games. I think I would like just like being able to, like, for instance, Witcher 3. I think I would like a Witcher 3 world where I could literally just walk around and explore, like, concepts from, I guess, the original stories, and maybe like what was going on with that, what folklore it came from, and how it was maybe even a little bit on like how it was translated into Witcher 3's world. I think there's room for this kind of thing in a lot of different video games, and especially most open world games.
Yeah, by the way, it was Sovereign All of Us.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Go ahead.
What are you eating? All noisy. Anyways, okay, I mean, that's more editing for you. Greedy TJ, that a lot of these worlds could use more in-depth detail and allowing you to know what's going on. Like in Skyrim, a lot of times you find these ruins and you have to piece together what this ruin was and what was going on here. And it'd be nice to have like more detailed in-depth narration or just something like that, like an exploration mode where you're just looking at the stuff and not worrying about fighting stuff.
Just like walk into a temple, nothing comes to life, and you literally get to have a little narration on like what that temple had to do with, mm-hmm. or like especially Daedric princes. Like not everybody knows about all the Daedric princes in the Elder Scrolls universe.
Right.
So like have some talking about like what that temple is and what it meant to that Daedric prince.
Well, that's why all the Elder Scrolls games have massive numbers of books that you can read in it.
Yeah.
Reading? Boring. I get all my books on tape.
By the way, Savonarola was the Dominican friar that I was thinking of.
Okay.
We're going to move on to the next item. Space combat game Allegiance blasts onto Steam 17 years after initial release, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. The 17-year-old multiplayer space combat game Allegiance has finally landed on Steam. It was initially launched by Microsoft Game Studios in 2000, and the source code was released in 2008, after which players could play the game free online. And on a side note, don't you wish every single company would do that when an MMO goes under? Just like, here's the source code. If you want to continue enjoying the MMO, go ahead and play it, without our help. You just figure out the server space and all that stuff.
That would be good. I agree there. That way people can continue keeping a game going and not become abandoned or just completely consigned to oblivion.
Anyways, the hope is that the Steam version, called Microsoft Allegiance, will attract more players and help the game live on. The game is half RTS, half first-person space combat sim. You and your team have one objective, to conquer the other team's base. You do that primarily by blowing up enemy ships, but there's a lot of strategy involved. One person acts as a commander with an overhead view of the map, barking instructions to teammates. That's the RTS part. There's also a tech tree for upgrades, base building elements, and an economy to balance. As well as player-controlled ships, there are AI mining craft that gather resources. It's your job to protect your team's miners while destroying the enemy's fleet. And the most number of concurrent players on Steam so far has been 85. But it is free to play, so we'll see if this attracts people. You know, just try it out and see if they like the sort of mix. I mean, there's something to be said about playing a wing commander, but having a commanding officer telling you where to go, and it's a human being, and it's always something different. Like, oh, listen, they just broke through. I need you to go over there right now. And you see the spot on the map, and you go, okay, I'm going there.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have a good point about, like, just, like, MMO games that have died. If there's no money to be made off of it, then what's the harm in releasing that stuff? There are several games that I can think of off the top of my head that I would love to see this happen to. I mean, City of Heroes, for one. Is there any sort of City of Heroes around anymore, or is that completely shut down on all fronts?
Yeah, it's gone. Yeah. It is still around. I think Champions Online is still around.
Yeah, but man, I would love to see a City of Heroes, City of Villains source code get out there and be put into a playable state again. Wouldn't you?
Champions Online is still around, which sort of tells me, you know what? Cities of a Hero should be, oh, that's right, guess who? It's our good old friends NCSoft who killed that game. Unfortunately. I mean, Champions Online is still around because its publisher is Atari.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I can think of other games like that that I would definitely enjoy seeing come back online just for, like, the sake of giving people the opportunity to re-explore those worlds. It would be a really fun time. I never played this one, and it sounds interesting.
And it's free, so you could always check it out.
Absolutely.
Here's the thing about a low population game. I noticed that low population games, the people playing it tend to be not assholes. Because they want other people to play. And they actually say, we need more players, you know? And unlike, say, League of Legends or Dota, which have millions of people playing, there's more of a chance there you're going to have people ripping you a new one and treating you like shit. Well, in Allegiance, you can make a mistake and people say, oh, listen, okay, so this is what you did wrong. Try and do it more this way, you know, and be more constructive.
I agree. The more people you seem to have in a group, the more chances of them being assholes, so yeah.
And oh, by the way, the graphics are not from 2000 either. They've really upped the... it's really nice looking. So if you're wondering about that. So, try it out. It's free to play, and I don't think there's any microtransactions.
Nice. I might actually have this on my What Have You Been Playing list next week.
So it's mostly positive, by the way, reviews on Steam. So there's that. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you have feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
And we'll see you next week. And keep an eye out for episode 479. It will be coming out sometime in the future for some dated news, but some very interesting conversation.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, and be cool, y'all.